Hop on board with the Active Transportation Alliance. This is Steve Dale's Other World. Kyle Whitehead is here with the Alliance. First of all, what is, and if you live in Chicago, you live anywhere near Chicago, you ever come to Chicago, you will be interested in this conversation. It's about today, but also greatly about tomorrow, you know, what Chicago will look like, how we'll get around, and what cities around the world are doing as they grapple with things like traffic, something we don't have any of in Chicago at all. But first of all, tell me about the Active Transportation Alliance.
Thanks very much for having us on today, Steve. So we are a biking, walking, transit, public advocacy organization. We're looking to give people options beyond driving their own private vehicles to be able to get around. We're an organization in the city and the suburbs, have about 7,000 members, 20,000 supporters. I've seen a lot of growth in recent years. We were originally the Chicagoland Bicycle Federation, and in 2008, we expanded our mission to include walking and public transit as well. So now we're a truly multimodal organization.
Which is great, because that's the reality. You know, people don't do one thing. They get around in different ways. But one of the ways in which people get around most often historically, in this country, arguably maybe more than some others, is by automobile. And traffic has become an issue cities are grappling with and trying to figure out what to do. So I believe London has said, okay, if you want your car to be in the center of town, you have to pay to play. I don't know that that would work in Chicago, but Chicago is considering all sorts of options.
Yeah, congestion pricing is what you're referring to in London, and we've seen in some other cities around the world. It's actually been floated over the years here in Chicago, but as you could imagine, it's a pretty difficult political hurdle to jump over. We certainly explore going down that road here in Chicago. But for now, I think one of the things to think about in terms of congestion, as you say, it's not a new problem. And what we like to remind folks is you're not going to be able to resolve congestion. Oftentimes, you're talking about building new roads and expanding roads, and people think that that's going to make the traffic go away. And what we've seen here in Chicago and around the country is when you expand capacity on roads, more cars come and fill that in.
Really?
So the best way to resolve congestion is to give people options beyond driving their own automobiles, especially in dense urban areas like ours. You want to focus on forms of transportation that are more efficient and moving people about the city in all different ways. So that's why we focus on our mission, not just on biking, but walking and public transit as well. And when you could provide those as safe, competitive, affordable alternatives, more people will use them. And that's how you can really resolve congestion issues.
So I want to talk about walking in a bit. And certainly we will focus on bicycling, because that is your, in a way, your focus. But I do want to talk about public transportation. So where does Chicago rank? I suppose compared to Los Angeles, we've got the best public transportation on the planet, but we kind of don't, do we? So how do we look compared to most other cities, not only in the U.S., but around the world?
You know, it depends on how you look at it, like you're saying. Actually, Los Angeles is one of the cities where there's the most going on in terms of public transit. They've had the greatest amount of investment in recent years, and they've stepped up and put their own money into it locally, which is something we haven't done here in Chicago of late. But you're right. Longer term, we have a great legacy transit system that carries an enormous amount of people.
So the way you said that was to put a positive spin on something. So we have a great legacy transit system. Does that say we're old and antiquated and falling apart? Or does that mean we're established? We've been here for a long time. Other cities have followed our model, or maybe a little of both.
I think it means both. You know, we have a system that was really ahead of its time when it was built and still does a great job moving people all around the city, but it has its issues. There's basic maintenance and modernization issues. You don't have to tell the CTA that. They're struggling to come up with money just to maintain the existing system. But moving forward, what we'd like to see is improvements and, most importantly, expansion of that system to reach more neighborhoods. A lot of people look at the train system, especially if you put the bus network aside for a second, and say, well, that's the way the trains are always going to be in Chicago. And they're, you know, used to it and apathetic about it. And what they don't realize necessarily is that we can expand the system and use it to access neighborhoods that right now are completely cut off from rapid transit. So if you live in Lakeview and work downtown, the transit system works pretty well for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or same thing if you're in Hyde Park on the south side and commuting downtown. But we know, especially in today's economy, when people are working all different schedules and all different jobs, that hub and spoke commute is just not the reality for a lot of people. And we also know that not all trips are work trips. You want people to be able to access every part of the city when it's safe and convenient for them. And for that, we need to be able to expand the system beyond really the way it's been for decades now.
Well, you said a lot there in the four sentences, whatever it was. You mentioned the magic four-letter word. It's safe. So in New York City, which some time ago got a bad rap, I don't think it even gets that bad rap anymore, because at 3 a.m, you can feel comfortable in most places. I'm talking about, it doesn't matter which borough here. You know, it could be the Bronx. It could be, it doesn't matter. Brooklyn Heights for sure. You can go Queens on public transportation and feel comfortably and safe. And it's busy even. In Chicago, I'm not sure that's the case in every neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people like to make the comparison to New York, and I'm from New York, so I'm familiar with that system as well. It's tempting. I think the two cities are really different places. One of the things that stands out is the geography, right? Chicago is much bigger and much, in a lot of parts, less dense than New York is.
Chicago's bigger? Even if you add up all the boroughs?
Geographically,
really?
Yeah. So the system is charged with trying to cover more territory than the system in New York does. Of course, it's not carrying nearly as many people because it's not as dense as New York's system. But meanwhile, so when there's not as many people and not as much development in a certain neighborhood, it can lead to an unsafe environment on the street as you're walking to and from the station. And then as there's not as much activity in the station itself, it could make you feel less safe. But I think for the most part, we do have a safe system no matter where you're riding it. And most people in this city do feel comfortable using public transportation. Oftentimes, a bigger barrier is where is that system going to take you? And is it coming frequent enough? Is it moving fast enough for it to be a good option? Or are you looking to reach for your car keys if you can afford to maintain and operate your own car or use another form of transportation? We want that public transit system to be the best option.
So do you think that if the transit system went to more places, every part of the city, not just some parts of the city. Although I would argue most parts of the city, if you don't get the train, you get at least the bus. But then the issue is, as you point out, okay, I'm waiting. I've got to be somewhere. I've got to go to the doctor, the dentist, whatever it is. So you don't have the kind of independence you do when you reach for the car keys. So do you think that more people would take public transportation if it were more convenient for us to take?
Yeah, we don't need to guess. We know, people have studied why people make their transportation decisions. And two of the biggest factors in getting people on your transit system are speed and reliability. So people want to be able to get on that public transit vehicle and know that it's going to get them there quickly, then also know that that trip is going to take them a certain amount of time. It doesn't even necessarily have to be the fastest time, but they need to be able to plan around it. And you mentioned the bus network, and that's where those factors are really playing a role right now in Chicago. We've seen a dip in bus ridership over the last several years, and one of the reasons we think that's the case is because for a lot of routes, the bus is not fast and it's not reliable. People don't know if it's going to take 40 minutes to get down Ashland or an hour and a half to get down Ashland. So they're going to look for another form of transportation. And we're working on a project right now. The CTA is participating in the project in an advisory capacity focused on local bus service and how can we make some cost-efficient investments to upgrade that bus service, make it faster, make it more reliable, and make it a better option for folks.
So say that again, the Active Transportation Alliance is involved as an advisor?
No, so it's our project. We're calling it Speeding Up Chicago's Buses. It's funded by Transit Center, which is a New York-based public transit advocacy foundation.
Working with the CTA to do this?
Yeah, so CTA agreed to participate in the project with us. So they're not necessarily going to endorse everything that we argue for in the campaign, but they're providing data and analysis and input alongside other stakeholders. So we're consulting with elected officials, also with other civic leaders and community community organizations and advocacy organizations, trying to gather as much input and data as we can. And we're going to also talk with folks, we are right now talking with leaders in other cities who are working to try to solve similar issues with their bus networks, and really focus on best practices and how can we get people back on the bus here in Chicago, because we know while we'd love to see rail expansion in the near term, you look at the financial situation that our city, our state, and our country are in, you know, rail projects are expensive and disruptive. But bus projects are generally less costly, can be done faster, and they're less disruptive on the street. So we think that there's real bang for your buck there when it comes to the CTA. So we're encouraging them to make some of these investments on these high ridership routes.
So speaking of which, it was about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, the CTA took away several routes, and there has been a push to get them back. The aldermen involved in, we have lots of aldermen involved because the routes just don't go to one place. So the aldermen involved, lots of them, say, sorry, it's up to the CTA. We can't do much about it. We can complain for you, but ultimately it's up to the CTA. But this seems to be in antithesis of what you're saying. So it seems that one step would be to put at least some of those routes, or let me rephrase, to consider putting at least some of those routes back. I mean, there were routes that were there, in many cases, for decades.
So I think...
in many cases were used routes. It was about finances that they cut them out.
Yeah, we agree that, we'd love to see more efficient bus routes all around the city. I think we also have to be realistic about the budget situation that the CTA is in right now. That frustration that people have about service cuts and fare hikes, the CTA, is used to hearing those complaints. We encourage people and work with people to pass on that message to their elected officials. I'm at every level of government, at the city council and the mayor here in the city, but also to their state legislators and their members of Congress as well, because the reason the CTA is in the situation that it's in is because we're not funding public transit at the rate that other regions are funding it.
True.
So you're leaving, CTA trying to pick up the scraps with their budget, whereas if we were funding it properly like cities around the country and around the world where they're seeing increases in ridership, we think we could be more competitive there. So, in the current environment with the CTA budget situation the way it is, we think that there's potential to focus on the routes where people are riding already. Lots of people are riding, but there's capacity for even more people on those routes because they connect to popular destinations and there's so many buses with extra
room. Those are some of the routes they cut out. And the thing, everything you say, I totally get. But on the other hand, you said it yourself. It's about convenience. It's about being there when you expect them to be there and being there in the first place. So maybe if you rebuild it, they will come. But maybe one of the reasons why you push people away is because of everything you also said yourself. If it's not available, people aren't going to use it. And at some point, I would argue also, just price themselves out. It'll be cheaper to take an Uber.
Yeah, so I think it really goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of speed and reliability. If you restore a bus route, but you're only running a bus on that route every half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, people are not going to use it because it's not a fast and reliable and frequent option for them. So if you restore service on that route, you need to run it fast and frequent, which of course means it's more expensive for the CTA to run service there. You look at where service is being run, the bus network still provides pretty good coverage. And there's routes where there's capacity for more riders. So we'd love to address the funding situation longer term and put CTA in a position where that we can talk about adding new routes and restoring some of those routes that can be cut. Right now, we're focusing on what's possible, and we try to be strategic political actors, and we think that there's real opportunity with some of these high ridership routes.
Okay, so I don't want to get bogged down. I love this conversation, though, and you know what? The CTA wants to do what's right too. I mean,
of course,
it's not that they want to have people stand on bus stops waiting for 3 hours.
They want who more are people never going to come. The bus.
Yeah, of course. So at the end of the day, everyone wants the same thing. Everyone also wants to be able to cross the street safely. I mean, one of your initiatives is walking, Switzerland, to randomly name a country, people walk, there are many other countries in the world, and Chicago is one of those cities that is really walkable for more than just the people that live downtown. And part of it is cultural, I suppose. So what are you doing to change all that so people use what they have, and that is their own two legs to get around?
Yeah, so we're actually seeing growth in terms of people walking to work and other destinations. A lot of it goes to how walkable an area and a corridor is. So you need more dense development near transit stations, near where people work so that the walk becomes feasible for a lot of folks.
You know, a good thing,
if you're living on the far northwest side and commuting downtown, you're not going to walk, right?
Right.
But if there's a walk within 30 minutes or less to a major destination, then it becomes a competitive option for you. So land use and housing and workplace development is a big factor in creating the environment for walking. The safety of that walk, as you referred to, is also a big factor. And that's where we think there's potential for improvement.
Is a catch-22, so the more people out walking, the more safer.
Yes.
And the fewer people out, the less safe. So it also builds – there have been studies that have been done that just people being out builds community.
Yeah, no, I think everybody, when they think of a vibrant, safe, happy environment in the city, they picture lots of people walking on the sidewalks, lots of people eating on the street. What they don't think of is fast-moving vehicles cutting through those streets. But unfortunately, that's how we've designed a lot of our American cities, including Chicago. You know, they were designed, our streets were designed reserving a lot of space for automobiles, and you're trying to move as many cars as possible, as fast as possible through a street. That's not an environment that's conducive to people walking, conducive to people being healthy and enjoying themselves on the street, which is why, you know, we argue that you should flip that balance. The city has endorsed a complete streets policy where they say the most important and priority people on the street are people walking, but we're still stuck trying to retrofit a lot of these streets that decades ago were redesigned for the automobile, and we still have a long way to go.
And those crosswalks, I think, could be a mixed blessing. So you get a ticket if you don't stop. On the other hand, the crosswalks are at bus stops on occasion. So how do you know if the person's waiting for a bus or waiting to cross the street? Or they're looking down on their phone. They're not. They're in the crosswalk, but they're looking for the Uber ride. Or they're texting their sister or whatever. Or you have no clue necessarily whether they want to cross the street. Or you can't even see the crosswalk at times because it's needs painting again.
Yeah, so a couple things here. I think, you know, the first thing is we need to increase awareness that there is a must stop for pedestrians law. We've done some survey research. Others have done this research. You know, I ride around with my wife, and I see this myself. People don't know that if somebody is waiting to cross in that crosswalk or even at an unmarked crosswalk, it is the law for you to stop and let that person cross.
How do you know if it's a crosswalk, if it's not marked as a crosswalk?
Well, if there's an opening into the street, so even if there's not, you know, marked zebra stripes across that crosswalk, it's still technically a crosswalk, and if somebody's trying to cross there
on any
you
corner?
Have to stop. Unmarked crosswalks are still crosswalks, and you have to stop for those people to cross.
So if someone, let's say you're going down LaSalle Street, I believe the speed limit's 35, and if someone just decides to step out into the street, you have to you hit your brakes and the five cars in back of me would hit me.
At those intersections. So where there's a ramp that goes into the street and usually there's some sort of marking but not the pronounced sidewalk marking that people are used to, that's still a crosswalk where you're required to stop.
Oh, there's no way you could see that. You've got the Postal Service parked in front of it. You've got delivery people parked. The guy delivering food is parked in front of it, you know?
Yeah, so people blocking the crosswalk,
and when you're going
vehicles 35, blocking
yeah,
the crosswalk is
see?
A factor. But, you know, you're talking about the speed, and we really think that's the biggest factor here is you should be driving slow enough, especially in a dense urban environment, to be looking for people. And when somebody is stepping into that crosswalk, you should be prepared and ready to stop. And unfortunately, that's not the case on a lot of streets in Chicago. People are driving too fast, and then they're not in a position to be able to stop when somebody is stepping out front. And you look at the data. So Chicago is putting together a Vision Zero action plan right now.
What does that mean?
So Vision Zero is a traffic safety movement that actually started in Sweden, is spread around the world, and it's catching on in the U.S. New York is probably the city that's furthest along, but we've had a Vision Zero commitment since 2012. And making a Vision Zero commitment means that the only acceptable number of traffic fatalities is zero, and no loss of life on our streets is acceptable.
That'd be nice.
So oftentimes people have an attitude towards traffic violence of apathy. You think you see somebody getting into a crash, and you hear of people getting seriously injured and killed, and you say, well, that's what's going to happen on the street. There's lots of people here. People are going to get hurt. People are going to get killed. We know that there's transportation decisions that can be made, education and enforcement decisions that can be made, street design and engineering decisions that can be made to bring those numbers down and ultimately get to zero traffic fatalities. So when you're looking at Vision Zero and what types of policy changes do you need, what type of environment do you need to really make a street safer for everybody, especially for people who are most vulnerable? So those are the people who are biking and walking. Vehicle speed is an enormous factor. If you can slow that vehicle down from 30 to 25 or 25 to 20, in the event of a crash with a person walking, the likelihood of that person surviving goes way up. Which is why, you know, we've encouraged the city to look at doing something like New York has done in lowering its default speed limit from 30 to 25. And other cities have gone as low as 20, depending on the type of street. Because if
in New York, I don't think you can go over 15 in most places.
Even that incremental drop in speed can mean the difference between somebody surviving a crash and somebody losing their life. In Chicago, you're right. We have lots of different types of streets with different types of capacity and different types of congestion. But we want all of them to be safe for people walking, safe for people biking, and safe for people in cars as well. We know that vehicle speed is the most dangerous behavior that you can try to target and try to improve the safety of a street.
I want to talk about bicycling. I mean, Chicago, growing up as a kid here, you'd see bicycles, you know, on occasion. Now it's hard to not find a bike. So if you go from spot A to spot B, unless it is 80 below on January 10th, you are going to see bicycles, the Divvy bikes or personally owned bicycles. We've become, I suspect, you're the expert, you'll tell me, one of the great bicycle cities in America.
We definitely agree there, and we're even seeing increases in people biking in the winter, people biking all year round.
Those crazy people, aren't they freezing?
You know, I think one of the improvements or changes we've seen is it's not those crazy people, right? It's your daughter, it's your aunt, it's your boss. You know, there's a portion of the bike culture that looks at it as a niche community, and you know, those hipsters riding up Milwaukee Avenue, or those older white men in Lycra on the lakefront trail. But really, there's all different types of people who are using a bike to get around. It's not just people riding for recreation. It's not just people you see riding down Milwaukee Avenue. And one of the greatest tools, I think, one of the greatest ways people have noticed that is Divvy, because more people are riding bikes for transportation to get to that transit stop, to get to their doctor's appointment, to get to a meetup with friends. These bikes are large and blue and attracting attention. And it goes back to that safety in numbers point that you made before. Mm-hmm. When more people are biking on the street, those people who are biking feel safer. They're more likely to be recognized by people driving, so they drive in a way that they're expecting somebody to be there.
I think
the street is safer for everybody.
I agree, and I think our culture has changed in Chicago. So for a time, I worried about the bicyclist because drivers were not paying attention. I think we've gotten a lot better at understanding, okay, there's three subsets here. There are pedestrians, there are bicyclists, and there are cars and trucks and other buses on the roads that bicyclists are being paid attention to. Is that true?
Yes. And, you know, we have to share the road. Everybody should be sharing the road and following the rules. And something that helps, which you also mentioned earlier, is most people use multiple forms of transportation. So I ride my bike often, right? I rode my bike over here.
Of course you did.
I also walk and ride the public transit system often, and I drive occasionally as well, right? So I have those different perspectives, and I recognize that, you know, that person biking next to me is not somebody who's part of some counterculture, that person is just trying to get around just like everybody else. So that helps people identify with all different modes of transportation and bikes in particular. Because of the growth that we've seen in Chicago in recent years, I think cars have begun to adjust and people are traveling safer. You know, we're not there yet in terms of where some European cities are, even some cities here in the U.S. There's still lots of streets that are not welcoming for people biking. And we really focus on infrastructure because we know the best way to make a street safer for people biking is to put in infrastructure and better protect those people who are biking, which also helps encourage more people to consider biking. And really what we've used in Chicago and has proven successful in cities around the world is a protected bike lane. So a marked bike lane that's striped on one or both sides is an improvement. We see lots of buffered bike lanes that provide a layer of protection and encourage people to separate from traffic, shows everybody where they should be on the street. But what makes a bigger difference is if you can provide some sort of physical separation between people biking and people driving. So we've seen the plastic bollards here in Chicago. And in recent years, they've upgraded some of that to concrete. Or there's a lane of parked cars. There's in other cities, they use planters more often. So some sort of layer of physical protection makes people feel safer biking, protects them from a potential crash, and also just gets more people thinking about biking. Because if you're, walking out of your house and seeing a street that has cars zipping by and no space for people biking, you're not going to hop on your bike. But if you see a bike lane, you see other people biking, you say, maybe I'll give that a shot. And you're more likely to be riding more frequently.
So a big advocate of bicycles up in Uptown, my friend James Kappelman, what he's done on Broadway is there are some giant planters. There's also places where there are, as you mentioned, cars parked. So there's a whole row of cars parked between the bicyclist and between traffic. And as I mentioned, planters. So it does all these things sort of at once, I think. It makes it safer for the bicyclist by further separating them. But in addition to that, there's a beautification part with the planters. They're pretty. But also, traffic is forced to slow down because now you've got one lane where you had two lanes of traffic. So the speed factor that you were talking about, but yet there doesn't seem to be congestion. I'm not quite sure why. So can you address that? It seems that
yeah, it's a very astute observation, Steve. I think the traffic calming benefit of bike infrastructure is something that's still undercovered here in Chicago and around the country and around the world. So a big reason why CDOT has been aggressively putting in bike lanes around the city is because they see that it makes the street safer for everybody because it slows vehicles down. If you think about it, when you're driving in your car, if you're in a wide, multi-lane road, you're naturally going to drive faster, even if you're not trying to do it intentionally. We react to the environment that we're driving in. So
sure.
If you can narrow that travel lane, even remove a travel lane and put in a bike lane, you're going to drive at a more appropriate speed and probably closer to the speed limit where you should be driving to begin with. And in addition, you're providing that lane for people biking. You have a beautification benefit like you saw. So it's really, we were talking about Vision Zero earlier. Bike lanes and bike infrastructure are a big part of that, especially in streets like we have in Chicago, many of which are way over capacity, right? So there's enough room for a bike lane. There's probably multiple lanes of travel in each direction, many of which are not full. And when you have a design like that, people are driving and people are driving quickly, and it's not a safe street for anybody.
So before we run out of time here, the biggest issue perhaps is the lakefront. You know, so many people use the lakefront who live anywhere near the lake. It's your backyard. If you live further west, you want to come to the lakefront because it's so nice. It's Chicago, especially maybe not so much in January, but you certainly do in July and August. So there's the attraction to Chicagoans. Suburbanites come for the many events that are along the lake or sometimes just to hit the Chicago beach, and tourists come. So everybody wants to be on the lake. And what you have then in the summer is everybody on the lake using this one skinny path. So you guys are a part of the solution to do something about it. So you've got the people walking their dogs, the people of all ages from 9 to 90 trying to walk the path. You've got the people pushing the baby strollers. You've got the rollerbladers. You've got the cyclists that are the tourists with the divvy bikes. But you've also got the cyclists that are hunched down with these fancy bicycles that weigh less than a half a pound, and they're going as fast as they can go to break some sort of speed record. You've got this whole combination of people. The city and others have said we need to do something about it. What's happening?
So the Lakefront Trail really goes to the roots of our organization. It's always been an issue that's been our members and supporters have been extremely passionate about, and making it safer, making it more convenient for everybody. And we've had a breakthrough in recent years. So, you know, it's a good thing that we've got more people walking and biking on the lakefront path. That makes our city a happier, healthier, more sustainable place. But we need to respond to that by upgrading the infrastructure. And that's why for years we've argued that the city should consider making separate paths for people biking and people walking. We've
so
talked
scenario,
with the park district about that. Yeah.
The scenario I described was pretty much right. Everyone wants to use it, no matter who they are, no matter what they're using it for. Now you're going to create more to use.
Yeah, so last year the city made an initial commitment to create separate paths, on a segment on the north side and a segment on the south side. People really liked and were excited about that idea. Somebody with a lot of money, Mr. Ken Griffin, stepped up and said, we should do that along the full length of the trail, donated that money to the park district. So now they're in the process of planning not just for those two segments, but planning for separation along the full length of the Lakefront Trail. So 18 miles. They're going to be doing that by the end of 2018. And we, along with the Chicago Area Runners Association, CARA, are consulting with the Park District, representing our members and supporters, and trying to give some advice about the best way to approach this, the best way to design the paths, because it's not as simple as just laying down another path. As anyone who's on the lakefront can attest, you know, there's different amounts of space depending on where you are, right? Sometimes there's green space, sometimes there's beach space, sometimes there's concrete space, sometimes there's not a lot of space at all. So how do you design it in a way that everybody feels safe, everybody feels comfortable? And that's what the park district is working on over the next couple of years, and we're really grateful to be able to be working closely with them, along with CARA as well.
I think that's great, and I think that's incredibly important, because that's Chicago, right? The lakefront, and encouraging people to use the lakefront is a great thing for all the reasons you described. But, you know, I'd want 90-year-old grandpa to feel safe walking across the path, or mom and dad with their little one-year-old, you know, that they're pushing in a stroller. And I also want the bicyclist to have a good time going back and forth at full speed if they want. And the tourist to stop every 3 feet and say, oh, that's the lake, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's for everybody.
Yes, yes, it is for everybody. And we shouldn't be designing it just for one type of user, right? We should be designing it for all types of users. And your analogy is a perfect one. In bike infrastructure design, we talk about 8 to 80. So we should be designing bike lanes and trails in this case so that a person who's 8 years old would feel safe and comfortable, and a person who's 80 years old would feel safe and comfortable. And that's the ideal, and that's what we're trying to work to on the Lakefront Trail and everywhere else in the city.
Or even me with my tricycle. Now, you haven't seen me bike. You don't want to see me bike. You have some events coming up I want to talk about.
So at the end of the month,
Which month?
This month, June, we have Bike Week here in Chicago, which everybody who rides a bike and many people who don't are familiar with. So it kicks off June 16th, goes for a week. There's different activities planned, which you can check out at activetrans.org, our website. The big event for us is the Bike Commuter Challenge. So that goes from June 16th. To June 30th, and we encourage people to sign up through their place of employment, and then we run a competition. So depending on the size of your company, the size of your nonprofit organization, we pit you against other groups and try to get more people within your company biking and biking longer distances. We have an app that allows you to track your mileage. We give people awards and prizes. We have some parties. So all information about that is on bikecommuterchallenge.org. It's a great encouragement event for people who bike all the time or people who are thinking about biking. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, try to get them to consider riding, talk to your coworkers and encourage them to sign up for the challenge. So that's coming up later this month.
Active Transportation Alliance. Again, the website is?
ActiveTrans.org.
ActiveTrans.org. Easy enough. Kyle, thank you so much. You know your stuff. You must be fun to travel with, whether it be locally in Chicago, because every street you must know. You must know every single bicyclist, but a pain to drive with because you never go fast.
Well, this city is so large and so diverse. I'd love to say that I know every nook and cranny of it, but I don't. And that's what we're working to do every day. That's why we're talking to our members and supporters. And we look to examples from other cities around the country and around the world because we want Chicago to be the best. We want more people biking. We want more people walking and riding public transit. We're moving in the right direction. We still have a long way to go. And that's why, we remain so committed to our mission.
Okay. I'm going to walk home. Thank you very much, Kyle.
Thanks, Steve.